Again, we're sitting here with our spine straight. The visualization would be like a beautiful stack of gold coins, that our spine is like a stack of gold coins sitting one on top of another. And we're going to work with various elements, and the breath will move in different directions according to the element. These are called the elemental breaths. And although some may have received this instruction differently, I assure you these are the instructions that were given by Hazaranayak Khan, and you can take it as such. People assign different names to other practices, and sometimes say it's the purification breath, or it's this breath or that breath. I'm not saying it's not so. All I'm saying is this is the one that was given by Hazaranayak Khan. So the first breath is this. You concentrate your glance. Your eyes are closed, or they can be slightly, you know, like a little slit, a little opening. If you need that to be sure you're directing your glance, as this. Put the glance at the tip of the nose. So your eyes are directed towards the tip of the nose. And just breathe in and out there. I would like for you to pay attention, feel what might be happening in your body as you concentrate the glance there. Now to that, add the concentration of an orb of light in a golden color. One might say the color of a topaz or a piece of amber, but in the form of light. And as you breathe in the nose and out the nose, you're actually breathing the light, allowing it to penetrate through the tip of the nose, striking at the back of the head. This is the earth breath, and you're breathing in the nose and out the nose. Concentration at the glance of the tip of the nose. The direction, as Pir Murshid Hazaranayak Khan indicated, there are different directions of the breath. And in this instance, the direction of the breath is on a horizontal plane. Again, don't grasp, don't feel, oh, I have so much to remember. Relax. All you need to do is breathe in and out the nose. Instructions enter the mind stream. They go somewhere. We don't need to memorize them or be attached to them. Just let it be, flow into the mind stream. But we're breathing in while we concentrate at the tip of the nose. The color is gold. The direction is horizontal. From a purely scientific point of view, which Anayak Khan said in the 20s, I still think even now science is trying to understand what happens in contemplative and meditative practices. What the intent is that it draws the spinal fluid up through the spine by concentrating here and puts it at the base of the brain, like the is that called the cerebral cortex there. So it's pulling that energy, that spinal fluid up, and you may feel that slight pressure at the back of the head. If you do, you do. If you don't, you don't. And what does the earth teach us? The earth, first of all, corresponds to the physical body. It offers us stability, groundedness. Its qualities that it teaches us is certainty, confidence, maybe a kind of courage, a balance. We allow the consciousness to lift. Now we come to the bridge of the nose. It's where the nose connects with the forehead. And there we're breathing in. Again, it's not, the breath is, yes, coming in and out the nose, but our awareness is the breath is entering through that center at the bridge of the nose. The color is like a beautiful emerald green. The element is water. And there we see this orb of light, and we breathe that light in through that center. Allow it to penetrate through this beautiful emerald green light. The breath changes. We breathe in the nose and out the mouth. The direction is now in a downward line. This teaches us about a kind of flow, a resignation, a gracefulness of movement. It is the thing that removes all obstacles from its path in a subtle way, or maybe it flows around them as water does around a big boulder. So it teaches us this capacity to be fluid in life. Earth is rather rigid. But water flows. So we breathe in the nose and out the mouth, concentrating on this color green, penetrating through the bridge of the nose. In the mouth, in the nose and out the mouth. As we know, earth can be very healing. It can sift impurities out of things. It can be used as a salve or a balm on a wound. Water cleanses. Water purifies. Water washes clean. And as we're breathing in this center, we're doing it for a reason. Because concentrating on that horizontal line, penetrating through that center, strikes something within the brain, the hypothalamus gland. And the hypothalamus gland, when it's stimulated, can create a sense of well-being. It emits certain hormones. So there is a mystical dimension of this, which is associated with the physical dimension of this breath. They're very profound, and they correspond to these very key parts within the cosmology of the brain, the anatomy of the brain, that can give a sense of well-being, relaxation, peace, unity, all of these things that we say we search for. It can come through the practice of this breath. And then you lift your glance and your awareness to the center of the forehead. The breath changes. It goes in the mouth and out the nose. In the mouth and out the nose. The line of the breath now is in an upward motion. We breathe in the mouth and we push it upward. While concentrating at the center of the head, you see an orb in the color of a ruby in the form of light. And the light penetrates through that center, striking the pineal gland. Again, when the pineal gland is stimulated, certain hormones are emitted, a sense of well-being arises, health, wholeness, even has a rejuvenating effect. This is why some meditators don't look their age, because it changes the physiology of the body as well. So we're breathing in the mouth, and out the nose. The direction is rising. The glance is cast at the center of the forehead. The color is red. And the element is fire, like fire dancing, rising up. And fire is energy. It's life. But like the flame reaching upward, it teaches us aspiration. It teaches us how to lift ourselves up, grasping for something greater than ourselves, which of course is a strange thing to say because ultimately it's within, but still it has an uplifting feeling as we're searching for it. And we have light with fire. It is illuminating. Illuminating. You lift your glance again. You cast it to the top of the head, the crown, and there you see the color blue, like a blue sapphire, with brilliant clarity and the light shining through, touching that center. This is the center, the fontanelle, this little soft spot. And we are massaging that spot. And when that spot becomes awakened, it gives us a feeling of this kind of connectedness, a higher mind, you might say. The breath is now in the mouth and out the mouth. It is said that the motion is in a zigzag. You might think like a wind catching a leaf. It's flying hither and thither. And the element corresponds to mind, creativity, artistry, expression. In the mouth and out the mouth. Now cast the glance even higher, as if you're seeing this beautiful orb of white light, like a diamond, shining above the head. And above that is a light that is descending, falling through that beautiful orb of white light, cascading through your entire being and over your entire being, like a robe of light enveloping you and filling you. And this is the element of ether. You may notice that as the light comes down and touches the orb above you, it has that sense of maybe a kind of scattering of light, like rainbows, small rainbows dancing in these forms of light droplets that flow down through you and around you. And the breath is very refined. The breath is in the nose and out the nose in a very subtle, quiet way. There are any comments or questions, please feel free to ask them. I might suggest to Halima and friends there, I notice your signal keeps dropping. You may want to completely restart your system and then join us again. It may just kind of reset things, make sure there aren't additional programs running if it keeps happening. And anyone that's joined us online, if you want to unmute and ask a question, feel free to do so or comment.
Just offered that. It was wonderful for her. Thank you.
Patty, thank you so much. And we're so, you're really a pioneer reaching out to us from Ecuador. Thank you so much for doing that, my dear. And you can also keep giving me a nudge if I need to speak slower. It's good for me to practice that too. Thank you so much. Any questions or comments?
It's hard to reemerge from that practice. Yeah. Come back. So.
You can feel yourself then.
Well, it's just such a good state to just stay in. No.
It's interesting, I think, that it's so helpful to experience that too, to feel that being drawn into that more contemplative, meditative space. And then there is sometimes that resistance to almost being reborn back into this reality. What a great lesson for us to have, you see? Because I think, to tell you the truth, so many people are often drawn to the spiritual path because sometimes there's pain there that they're trying to reconcile. You understand what I'm saying? I mean, what starts that search? You get a little glimmer that maybe it isn't all there is. Or we want a deeper understanding of things. Isn't it true? Do other people feel that?
That's, yeah. I mean, that's, that sums up why.
I think it's a given that we, you know, there's something knocking. And it's like, you know, we want to answer it, but we don't know where the key is. You know what I mean? Sometimes we don't know where the door is. Once we find it, we can't find the knob. You know? It's like, So when we do the practices, I think it can give a sense of being at home, that we're kind of finding our place back, maybe almost to the womb, you know, the Divine Mother, the Divine Presence. We don't want to leave that. But we have to. And then we say, but I can always remember. See, that's what zikr is. It's remembrance. But if we can come to that remembrance breath by breath, my God, what could our world be? What could we be and what could the world be? And then I say to myself, I love these lessons that we get sometimes, especially in the East, where we're taught about this nature of being agile, to flow back and forth from those states, you know, to get a little bit of a taste of the honey and then bring it back. You know what I mean? It's like the bee. And I think we can be like that. And I think that these practices teach us that more and more, till that gap isn't there so much anymore. It's just one continual flow. Does that make sense to people?
Mm-hmm. I have a few things to share from Nur Wasi, who does not have a microphone, so I'll read what he's written. And he's written several things. So, please excuse my pronunciation if I say anything incorrectly. The presence of the patriarch Yosef is felt strongly. My given name is Yosef, and I feel enveloped by his coat of many colors, wholeness, which is salam, shalom. And then he writes, where do I, in quotation, begin, and where do I end? The rainbows dance not only my physical space, but wider than that. Image, my body is in my soul. And then, and Scott has also shared something, but he's also commented on what Nur Wasi had written.
They've got their own thing going on over here.
Okay. But anyway, Scott has said, Nur Wasi, if it is safe for me to say, I am only a student, that to be at peace with all first requires that we are one within ourself. This balance is certainly a step towards such wholeness. And Nur Wasi said, absolutely.
Thank you. So there were comments, but no questions. Am I correct?
Well, but Scott has also said something kind of mixed in with Nur Wasi's comments, but I didn't want to mix that in, so hold on. The focal points used
we just talk?
Actually, Scott, do you have a microphone? Do you want to turn it on and say your statement or question? Oh, he doesn't.
Okay.
The focal points used are actually the opposite from the ones I've become accustomed to through my prior meditation experiences. In particular, the use of fire tones for the third eye breath. This is a whole other vibration and very balancing rather than amplifying.
Thank you for sharing that. Yes, I think the key to the practices that are given by Anayat Khan, can they hear us that mm-hmm. you did that?
Mm-hmm.
Is that that they are balancing. I mean, I think that's what we're trying to do here, is to find a balance somehow. Isn't it?
It's like a tuning up of the body. I was thinking about, I love it when you do the Tibetan bowl.
Mm-hmm.
I love it, the clearing tone that radiates up to the room. And I think it's the same with the breath.
Yes.
Because there's a vibration that I can kind of feel just doing a little bit, as it is, it was rising up.
Yes.
And so by the time I got up here, I felt really in tune with it, or really
mm-hmm.
uplifted. That was the easiest breath for me, was this one up here.
Mm-hmm.
And I had more resistance with the one on the bridge of the nose.
Mm-hmm.
I like the earth and the spirit one. I was
mm-hmm.
struggling a little more with the other two.
Mm-hmm.
But I could. It was like we were tuning our bodies.
Mm-hmm. It's true.
So that we can become more attuned to each other and to the divine.
Absolutely.
It resonates.
Yeah. I think that's very, very true. And I think that it also, like the bowl, it's used to turn those energy centers. And the breath starts to do that too, which I think diagrammatically are often shown flat, like this.
Mm-hmm.
But they really move like this around, as if you see like people spinning plates on a stick,
mm-hmm.
that's how they really move, in a clockwise direction. And so the breath will get us going in that kind of, it will tune those, because sometimes aberrant pain or disharmony in the body, which is disease,
mm-hmm.
is that these have begun to spin in another direction that's counter or lopsided. So sometimes we have these pains or tensions or disease, and of course the objective is to keep them spinning in their proper order, in their right rotation, so to speak. It's like cogs of a wheel of a beautifully running machine.
Huh.
Yes.
What direction are they supposed to be spinning in? Like when you visualize that,
clockwise.
Clockwise.
From you, you're like. And in fact, those that have participated in Zikr, it mimics that motion that we do. You see? This is one of the reasons we do all these things, no one explains them. There's a practical reason as well. So we do, it's like, well, why? My God! Is there a reason, people, or are we just getting dizzy here, But there's a reason for that.
Are you saying the clockwise motion in relation to your orientation to the earth?
The orientation to yourself, even.
Well, so this is clockwise.
Yeah, that's right.
This is clockwise.
That's
this
right.
This is clockwise. But if I look up like that, that's counterclockwise. The same.
But you're like the center of the hands, and the hand, you see?
Yeah.
And that's why we do the Zikr in the sweeping motion.
But the turning is done.
Yeah, that's a whole other thing.
Okay. And I have another question. When we visualize with the earth element through the tip of our nose and the breath, we feel the breath in the back of our skull, in the back of our head. Do we do that with each breath? Is
yeah.
that what you're saying? With each breath, we feel it swirling to the back. Okay. Yeah.
You'll actually feel, though, with time, this. And is it true for those that do the practice, you feel it in the different parts of your head?
You mean as through the different breaths?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah, you'll feel it sometimes at the back, sometimes at the center, sometimes at the front, sometimes it'll move. And it's supposed to do that. With the earth breath, it's really coming here. But with the water breath, it'll probably stay, the pressure, if you're really concentrating, or that feeling, it's kind of a massaging, or to me it's a kind of pressure. Do you all feel it like that?
Mm-hmm.
It can be like that. It's at the center. And on the fire breath, it will come to the forward, to the actual forehead. You can maybe feel something here. And then when the crown, you'll feel it here. It sometimes can come like itching or tingling or
mm-hmm.
moving or pressure or something, massaging. But this sense of coming from this etheric state and coming back into the earth is very profound. And one, I'm glad you brought that up, Latif, because it's a journey. The breath is a journey. And we talk about that even in Sufic terms, and it's talked about in other cosmologies as well. The journey, the arc of ascent, the arc towards God realization. But then that's only, some people think that's it. You know, I just want to get up there and then I, and one of my friends from the yogic tradition in India, she says, I don't understand this. This is like using a ladder to climb to the roof of the house and then kicking it down. How do you come back down? You see? So a lot of times people think, oh, it's just about that. But it really, to be integrated, there is the arc to God realization, but then the integration of God realization into self realization is the completion of that. And so that bringing that into the earth is also another part of the journey, right? Yes, Primagita.
In response to what Latif was saying, there's also this sense of returning in a different state.
Mm-hmm.
So the balancing happens with going through all the elements. There's a really sense of balancing, but there's also this sense of going from, I mean, I can feel the difference in my state from when I came through the door to arrive here, and now, because there's a refinement, once that ether breath, there's a refinement that occurs, and then it's like returning in a much more refined state. And so you perceive everything around you in a very different way, too.
Yeah. And how long did that take? Not so long.
Mm-hmm.
But it to end, it means, wow, what could we accomplish if we do it every day? Miracles. That's the answer.
I had an interesting visualization while I was doing the exercise. It was like it was in myself and outside of myself. And the visualization was doing this teaching and this work for the planet, for the economy, for all the people that are troubled and in war-torn countries, to bring balance and that delicacy that Karima Gita was talking about into manifestation of the physical so that we can everybody raise up. It was really quite beautiful.
Yes?
Really kind of related to that. Is there a parallel to like a bodhisattva motivation in the return coming down the ladder?
I think that's very much so, and even in that one teaching about the one that I read at the very beginning about how when one is really tuned in one's own breath, the mastermind can offer clarity of thought, the healer can offer healing, that we have then the capacity, we're not really doing anything, but we become the vehicle for that. And we can use that. There have been times, I'll give you a very practical example. Has anyone been caught on an airplane with a crying child for like 13 hours?
Or in this case, 13 years.
Yes, that's right.
You hold them and you carry them.
Yes, but if they're not your own child, you see.
But I'm the flight attendant, so I could do that.
That's right. I'm not, and I might not. That I might get in trouble. But you see, you can use the tendency is that the people around them go, oh my God, and get agitated, and the baby feeds on that. And if you can stay calm in your breath, that will also have an effect. You see, now there's a very practical application. That we have that, just like you're saying, Gay, and also, Latif, what you're saying, or Nuri Shafi, that we have the capacity to influence the atmosphere around us. But only if we're keen observers of our own breath. That's why Sufis spend so much time studying the culture of breath. And so we understand our own breath and our own rhythm through that study. Then we understand, oh, I'm feeling agitated and my breath does this. Then we can recognize that in another. But then we know what to do to our breath to help calm ourselves. Then we can offer that. Not like we need to be egoistic about it. You know, we're just a human being, maybe trying to offer some peace and balance in the world, but we're not like a... You know, who are we also? I mean, the truth is maybe someone really needs to be agitated. Maybe it's the very thing that they need to get out of the abusive household. We can't say, you see. We can't impose that on people. But somehow we can feel, we can listen somehow to see if there's something in that moment that we can do. It's very presumptuous to think that we have all those answers. Do you understand what I'm saying? But by studying that and trying to perfect it within our own beings as much as possible, it develops a kind of character or quality that influences others around us. Without saying anything, no lecturing, no big discourses, it's just who we are and they feel it. And a Sufi from, she's one of the elders now in the group in Europe. She's a great scholar. She writes for Princeton Press and does very esoteric studies in certain subjects of art. She's an art historian. And she would commute back and forth to Princeton because she taught there, but she would do her writing and research in Europe. And, you know, God has graced me with a friendship with her, and one day she was saying, you know, I have a colleague that's very scientific mind, and we've worked together for many years, but he's come to a point in his life where he's sort of asking about deeper issues. And he said to me, you know something, don't you? And she said, we've never talked about it. It's just, he said, I know by the way you are, you know something. Will you share with me? And it gave her, but you know, years of being together, never really lectured or brought in books or, you know, tried to save his soul or whatever people think they're doing, do you know what I mean? But he, you know, it was just her atmosphere and her manner, and it drew him slowly into it, that it provided an opening. How beautiful is that?
Are you saying that your friend is teaching by example rather than teaching verbally or anything?
Yeah.
She's just
being.
Mm-hmm. Her character has been molded by the breath, apparently.
Oh, yeah. So and it really is.
It's just radiant.
Yeah. Yes.
I need to step back just a bit because Scott had a question about when we were talking about the clockwise motion.
Mm-hmm.
Would it be safe to define the clockwise movement as creative or constructive, and to define the counterclockwise motion as decreative or deconstructive, then?
Well, if it helps you. One thing that we want to do is we want to really try to have an experience and not so much. You see, thinking only can get us so far. It's like we can only get so far driving the vehicle, and then we have to get out and walk. And then sometimes we have to crawl, and then sometimes we have to claw our way up. So we have to be, we can be analytical, but at the same time, well, what does that mean?
I have another question too.
Well, did I answer the question, Scott? Or you kind of understand where I'm going, my dear?
The experience of motion is the element which matters.
Well, the experience of understanding and realization is what matters. And that comes in time.
Other question?
Okay.
This is from Aleem. I believe you have a microphone if you want to go ahead and ask your question. Aleem or Aleema?
It's just an app.
Is it our side that's
on the collar, and then the direction of the breath going up from the tip of the nose to the back of the head, and I did feel the sensation there. And then you mentioned that it is to be sensed horizontal, or that the earth is horizontal. I was a little bit confused on how I should be integrating that into the whole practice.
Thank you for asking that. The breath is spreading in a motion horizontal plane. So it has a sense of spreading out in all directions, like a horizon. Is that clear?
Yes, thank you very much.
You're welcome. Anyone else?
Well, there is just some banter back and forth. Would everyone like to hear? In terms of, to Aleem's question, Nurwasi had said, God writes straight with crooked lines. And then several people laughed out loud.
May I comment on Scott, what Scott was asking about this clockwise motion as compared to counterclockwise? This is something innate that we already have within us. We already have this knowing of this particular way to turn, to move.
I don't know, what do you think?
Well, when Scott said that, all of a sudden I was thrown back into my childhood, and they're illegal now, but they were like these things that you would play on, and they would like spin around, and you would run. And then also there were things on a pole. This was really fun. You would hold on to them, and you would run around with your other friends on the other side, and your bodies would come up off the ground.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And it's too dangerous now. You don't ever see them anymore, but it was really fun. But you know what? I thought every single time I ever did that, my whole childhood, it was always clockwise. Never did we go that way. It was always that way. And that's why I asked, maybe in Australia they go the other way. I don't know. But I'm just wondering if this is just this natural thing that we're already attuned to. Because otherwise, why would we have... Did everybody go that way?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, and Scott says, yes, clockwise always seems the natural motion for
well,
him.
Well, yeah. So the kids know...
And little kids
in transit.
They all spin. Little kids all spin.
Yeah.
Right?
That's
a part
right.
of a developmental
mm-hmm. piece of little kids.
They all do it.
Mm-hmm.
They've been around with you.
They
all
spin
But you
know, in the most of the traditions, which is contrary to the one that you were mentioning about the dances going a certain direction, but in Hinduism, in Buddhism, you see always the circumambulation is in that motion. when you go around a temple and offer prayer, it's always clockwise. Because it mimics the sort of the passage of the sun, the bringing of the light. Even when one prepares their offering bowls in the Buddhist tradition, you wipe your bowl in that way so that you're wiping it in that same circumambulation. Everything is in that motion. So it's the recognition of this whole, you know, the whole movement of the whole universe. I mean, Pythagoras was very keen on this, the symphony of the spheres, the dance of the spheres. This isn't new age, this is really old age stuff.
Maybe the recognition is always going
that. Yep, that's right, like the sun dance. The sun dance is what it's called. Shall I go on? So this again is a reading from Hazarat Anayat Khan from the Gathas, section 3, number 7 on breath. And the subject is breath is likened to water. Breath is likened to water. The flowing of the breath is like the flowing of a stream. Inhalation and exhalation show ebb and flow. Parts of the earth which water does not touch remain barren. So the centers in the body, with all their intuitive, innate capacities, remain unproductive if the breath does not reach them. Besides various diseases, in spite of all their apparent causes, often have one principal cause, and that is the lack of free flow of the breath. Many operations could be avoided, and several diseases could be cured by the knowledge of the phenomena of breath. The Hindu sacred rivers, the Ganga and the Yamuna, are outward symbols of Jalal and Jamal, the two directions of the flow of the breath. And the place where they meet is called Sangam, the meeting or unity, which is considered most sacred by the Hindus. That Sangam is the meeting of these two opposite flows. It is the meeting of the two directions in the center, which is called Kamal by the Sufis. The water rises, passes, falls, and runs zigzag. So here are the same motions that we just did, you see. In our breath practice, the water rises, passes, falls, and runs zigzag, and stands if held. So if the breath is held or water's held, it just stands still. And so is the breath. Every afore above said action of the breath has a meaning and has a particular effect. As even water varies in its power and magnetism while going through the aforesaid directions. Water is a tonic, and breath is life itself. No tonic can be better or greater than breath. The spiritually evolved person's presence, therefore, brings about a cure in cases where all remedies fail. Water is the necessity of life, and breath the only condition for living. Without it, life is impossible. Water falls as rain from above. So breath is from above also. So breath is from above also, though from another dimension. You see, and that's what some of you were talking about, that experience of bringing that dimension, feeling that dimension. Water rises as vapors, so breath rises as gases, also with joys or depressions. Pure water is health-giving. Pure breath gives life. Water partakes of all things mixing with it, and so does breath. So does breath. So if you add salt to water, the water becomes salty. If you add sugar to water, the water becomes sweet. If one is not in control of one's breath, an angry person can easily make you angry. A sad person can easily make you sad. A depressed person can easily make you depressed. You see what I'm saying? Breath mixes with all, you see? Again, I only emphasize this because if suddenly we feel overcome, which happens, we wake up, you're feeling fine, and all of a sudden we're feeling gloomy. We don't even know why. Or we're feeling agitated. We don't know why. What happened? Something's in the atmosphere, and that if we're not mindful of one's own breath, we absolutely mix with it and take that in. Now, of course, the role of the bodhisattva would be to transform it, but unless one's practiced, one can't do that. Transform the energy and offer it back in another form. You understand? So we do all these practices again and again to become more masterful and to understand. If someone is very angry, perhaps their fire element is out of balance. And we don't want to offer air, it'll make it even more agitated, right? And if we throw water on it, then somebody's going to really feel their spirits are dampened. You see, even our language is there. But sometimes throwing a little earth on it helps ground it. So we study the elements because it helps us understand the nature of breath within our own being so that we can understand that around us. Does that make sense to people? It's very logical. Very logical. Now here, are there questions?
Just agreeing, yes. Loving, truly, Malian.
Thank you, Aline.
And yes from Scott.
Thank you. And Patty, is it okay for you, my dear?
I'm sorry, can you say that again? Patty.
Patty, is it all right for you? Are you hearing everything clearly?
Yes.
Very good.
Not so much, but I try to understand almost everything.
Thank you so much. We appreciate it so much. So, the terms Jalal and Jamal and Kamal, these are terms in the Sufi tradition. And in this class, we've been studying this for some time. And I will read now a little bit and give some commentary on this subject, and we will do a practice. Because these two are like those two rivers that was talked about. And the point is understanding the current and what it invokes in our being, and in when we want to come into balance with those two flows of energy, how to do it, or when we need to invoke one or the other, how to do it, because they have very specific purposes. And I'd like to speak a little bit more about that. Now, let's see. And those that have been following this, you've heard it before, but I think it bears repeating, because the more infusion we have with it, the more we integrate it. So bear with me if you feel you've heard this before, but let it go deeply in. Every person has either a Jalal temperament or a Jamal temperament. Those words are spelled. Jalal is J-E-L-A-L. J-E-L-A-L is Jalal. And Jamal is J-E-M-A-L. J-E-M-A-L. So every person has either a Jalal temperament or Jamal temperament. A person with temper is Jalal. With courage is Jalal. With power, with strength is Jalal. A person with kindness, tolerance, meekness, mildness, modesty, humility is of the Jamal temperament. Now you notice he didn't say masculine and feminine. You see how much more universal that language is too. Then through the day and night, one changes their condition from Jalal to Jamal, and from Jamal to Jalal. Check in now. Are you in both nostrils or in one or the other? Can you tell? So sometimes there's a dominance, sometimes it's imbalance. We'll talk more about what that means. Jalal has a tendency to be active, and sometimes it acts beyond its control. Therefore, in the capacity of Jalal, a greater control is needed than a Jamal. For everything that runs quickly is in a danger of falling. Among the Sufis, there are two kinds of adepts, Jalali and Jamali, and each has its own line of progress and action. They are not called so for their temperament, but for their method of progress and action. The Jalali among them, with their great psychic power, can prophesize and cast out disharmonious vibrations. They can heal, and they can control the world and heavens according to their development. So it's about, we have a natural tendency maybe within our being to be one way or another. But you see here, Anayak Khan is very subtle. This is why these teachings are very subtle. It's not something gross that we can grasp in a moment and then repeat a clever line again and again. Listen to this line. Did you catch that? Where he says, among the Sufis, there are two kinds of adepts, Jalali and Jamali, and each has its own line of progress and action. They are called so, they are not called so for their temperament, but for their method of progress and action. This doesn't mean I'm a victim of my own personality or character quirks. This means I choose to act a certain way because I'm a masterful. We become that. And there's a time, yes, where someone has to use a gentle hand, and there's some time when you have to give a big stick. You understand? It's not like, oh, I don't want to do that, or I'm going to do that. You know what I'm saying? One has to understand the condition and understand the course of action that's proper. Does that make sense? It's very subtle. I swear, I think we could sit here for myself, and maybe I'm very simple. You all are probably much more advanced than me, I can say, without a doubt. But the truth is I could sit here all day and think, breath is likened to water. I could just meditate on that and think, what does that mean? Just one little line with a few words. But it's vast teaching. Or the adept acts according to not their temperament, but the course of action that's needed. How extraordinary is that? It's kind of like he's saying, get over yourself. You understand? It's like, get over yourself. What is called for? If we're all going to be responsible, you know, his message said this. I don't know if I have it here, but, you know, it bears saying if I do, because it's so beautiful. And excuse me, I've been struggling with a bit of laryngitis. Those of you that know me know that my voice is a little off, and I apologize for that if it's unpleasant in any way. I don't know if I have it, but it's such a beautiful... Do we have it online?
Do you mean the recording?
Not the recording, though. Yes.